So to wrap up our show about wild crimes, we want to reference one of the most popular TV programs ever, one that portrayed taking down organized crime. If you walk through the
garden. Now, I know you don't want to hear this, Lieutenant, but the money is real and it's everywhere.
Yep, The Wire.
And more than the drugs, it's the money that matters.
It's what many of us civilians think of when we hear about corruption or a big sting operation. On TV, we usually see crimes involving drugs or arms or human trafficking. So you might be surprised to hear that animal trafficking is the fourth largest industry for organized crime. This is sound from an undercover video of a sting called Operation Pluto. Traders in Vietnam are rummaging through large green sacks filled with thousands of pangolin scales.
So pangolins are really endangered in the wild and hugely threatened and not permitted for trade at all at any level.
This is Sarah Stoner. She's the director of intelligence at the Wildlife Justice Commission. The traders in the video think they're bargaining with potential buyers, but they're really talking to Sarah's undercover colleagues because pangolins are the most trafficked mammal in the world.
Unfortunately, over the last few years, there's been this upsurge in a demand for their scales, which is often used for traditional Chinese medicine. They're being trafficked in huge numbers now.
If you've never seen a pangolin, well, they're quite extraordinary. Here's Sarah Stoner describing them from the TED stage.
They're often referred to as scaly anteaters, with ants being their primary diet. And because of this, they play a really critical role in the ecosystem as pest controllers, where it's estimated they can consume as much as 200,000 insects per day.
Before pangolins became popular for use in Chinese medicine, they were also hunted for their meat, a delicacy.
But pangolins are really difficult to see in the wild. They're known to be shy and elusive creatures. They're also nocturnal. And when pangolins are under threat, they roll into a ball where they are protected by an outer layer of scales. But it's actually these scales that are to their detriment.
Because these scales can make smugglers rich. Police eventually seized 780 kilos of dried pangolin scales in that warehouse in Vietnam, which means that around 2,000 pangolins were killed.
I still find it unbelievable, even though I work on this problem every day.
It can take Sarah and her team years to uncover a pangolin trafficking network that actually leads to arrests. And it all starts by, following the money.
What's really important to remember is that every step that the pangolin moves through the supply chain, the pangolin becomes more valuable. So the poacher on the ground won't receive much, a few dollars maybe a little bit more, but not really not much. The pangolin will then be passed on to a middleman. Often they will go to a facility where they will be processed. And by processed, I mean the scales are removed. And there they will then be moved into sacks, and then the sacks will then move finally to their consolidation point, where they will be smuggled out of Africa, let's say somewhere like Nigeria, for example. So we often see pangolin scales hidden in shipments of peanuts or coffee or beans, that type of thing. So all of the paperwork is all legal. It's estimated around only about 10% of shipments are discovered, and likely much more go undetected, of course.
So we're talking about figuring out a vast global network of people, all with different jobs along the way.
Yeah. And there may be 20 or 30 or 40 individuals in that network.
Okay, so then what do you, as an intelligence analyst, do?
So what analysts try to do is say, okay, so if you want to have the most impact on disrupting this criminal network, you need to target these three individuals, because these three individuals have a really important facilitating role. So if we think about poachers, for example, they might be part of the network, but they will very easily be replaced by someone else.
Sarah, maybe I watch too many movies, but I'm wondering, like, is there a godfather of pangolin scales? Is there someone sort of rich and tucked away who doesn't do any of the dirty work, the puppeteer, as it were, of the entire crime network?
Yep, there often are, yeah. So we call those individual level five targets.
Level five, okay.
So a poacher would be level one. The kingpins, those top guys, are level fives. Level two would be the guys that perhaps takes the pangolins from the poachers and then connects the next level. Level three, so they're kind of brokers. They're the ones that are really well connected quite often. And then level fours, they're usually the ones that are most connected to the level fives. So it's important to identify the level fours so we can get more understanding about the level fives. But generally, the level fives are completely removed from daily operations. They're usually very clean individuals. They pay their taxes, and on the surface, they may have several legitimate businesses and look, you know, very clean. And they often have very influential roles, sometimes in really high-level government positions as well.
When there's a big bust, what happens to the people, and what happens to all those pangolin scales?
So those scales will be sent off for DNA tests. And that's really important, actually, when we're thinking about understanding supply chains. So where geographically they have originated from in Africa. So that's great for mapping out where a lot of these pangolins are coming from. And that's great intel as well going forward. In terms of the suspects, they will go through the judiciary process. And sometimes that process can take a long time. Other times in other countries, in Asia, for example, that can be quite quick and people can be sent to jail quite quickly.
Of course, it's not just pangolins that are being trafficked and that you're investigating. There are lots of animals, elephants, rhinos, exotic reptiles, big cats. Do you get to see a lot of sting operations?
We do. Yeah, we do. We had a case a few years ago. We had a live camera feed that was of a hotel room in Malaysia, and there was a trafficker there, and he was trying to sell some turtles, and he had them in these suitcases, and the turtles were climbing all over the couch and the bed in the hotel room. Yeah, and we saw the police come in and arrest him. So yeah, we do get to see, like, and that really spurs us on and really motivates us. But most of the analysts like being behind computers, and we're often very data people, so we quite like trawling through lots of information, but it gives us great insight and also makes us real experts in what we do as well.
I just want to end on the pangolin. It's a really sad situation for these animals. But I just wonder, you know, with each cache that you do hunt down, with each bust that happens, it must feel like a drop in the bucket. But does it give you any hope at all?
Yeah, I do think that we are moving in the right direction. So we had a case last year in Nigeria where a network of individuals were trying to organize a shipment of pangolin scales from Nigeria to Vietnam. And we were able to support the Nigerian Customs Service to identify where that warehouse was. And they conducted a raid and they found 7 tons of pangolin scales there. Oh. I'm confident that they will receive a conviction, but time will tell. But I really try and accept that it's often, you know, 2 steps forward and 1 back. And that we have to just try and channel that frustration and emotion to try and do the best work that we can. Because we're all in this job because we do love wildlife and we want to end this sort of horrific activity.
That was Sarah Stoner. She's Director of Intelligence at the Wildlife Justice Commission. You can see her full talk at TED.com. Whether you love animals or you love the true crime podcasting genre, or maybe you love both, we hope that you enjoyed our show this week about crimes in the wild. Our episode was produced by Katie Monteleone, Fiona Guerin, and Matthew Cloutier. It was edited by Sanaz Meshkinpour and Rachel Faulkner-White. Our production staff at NPR also includes James Delahousie and Catherine Seifer. And I want to mention that we have had several additions to our team in the past months. Congratulations to James and Sanaz for bringing Emmett and little Sina into the world, respectively. And congratulations to Rachel, who is now called Rachel Faulkner-White. Congratulations, Rachel and Kellen. Our theme music was written by Ramteen Arablouei. Our audio engineers were Nisha Hines, Joby Tanseko, and Patrick Murray. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Colin Helms, Anna Phelan, Michelle Quint, Jimmy Gutierrez, and Daniela Balarezzo. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you've been listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.